Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddham dhammam sangham namassami.
We're students of truth and reconciliation. All of us, we're here trying to study about the truth of the way things are. Reconciliation comes from the verb to restore. It's a beautiful choice of words. We're trying to restore ourselves to knowledge, to accountability, to recognition, to purify by special service after desecration of life, a dishonoring of life, and inhuman treatment of other humans. And the special service that we can provide is our love, our compassion, our attention, and our making amends, or repairing in any way that we can. And internally, we have to do that for ourselves in our own lives. Our special service is this very practice of waking up to the truth of what we are and what we're not, to understand the level to which delusion can bring a human being, the level of decrepitude and dishonoring our morality, disintegrating our conduct. When we are not ethical, we are disintegrated. We have no integrity. So the Buddha's teaching is one that makes us morally whole. Morally whole means that we must follow a path that is virtuous and that honors life. It honors respect. So we honor truth in body, speech, and thought in a way that everything that we do, even our intentions, would not violate trust. We are not trained in these things in the worldly system. And certainly, we can see that atrocities happen. We completely fail ourselves, lost the way. So, as difficult as it might be, we must also bear compassion for the perpetrators of these horrors. We are children, even though we're adults, and we have not perhaps properly learned how to persevere in ethical speech, conduct, and thought. But in the Buddha's training, it's foremost, and we can see how not keeping clear in our minds, being tempted by desire for money, for popularity, for possessions, for success, for praise, for social approval, for advancement, how easily it is for us to wander away from our basic values and violate ourselves or each other. And that's why the Buddha sets up this system of precepts. So everything that he offered us as ways of training the mind, they're not just ritual, but they create for us a special way of practice, serving that which helps us to honor life, to honor integrity, and to preserve it, to protect it, to defend it, to sacrifice so that we can repair and make amends for what has been wronged. Over the many millennia of human civilization, there have been periods of darkness. Atrocities happen over and over again. And that's because this realm is one of prolific suffering. But it is also a realm where, in the face of that, we can rise above to repair and uplift us in a way that honors the possibility for our complete awakening. As impossible as that might seem, it is possible. So these two extremes exist, and both are not far away from us. We have to learn to purify these tendencies of the mind so that we can develop the factors of enlightenment. If we just look at the letters of reconciliation, we can use that as a way of reminding ourselves, what can I do to restore? And you may have noticed when you were meditating, perhaps the mind wandered away from the present moment. So if we're inclining towards purification, then if we entertain ill will, that's an impurity. As minor as it might seem, the more we entertain it, the more our energy is defiled. And in the present moment, we return to that which is pure and sacred. And no matter how awful things are around us, no matter what the condition of our life, no matter the situation we're in, what we've suffered before, here is a new moment, a new breath, a new beginning. We restore ourselves to purity. It won't happen unless we make effort in that direction. And that takes energy. Present moment awareness, we have to keep putting in the causes and conditions for that energy to arise and to be sustained. And then C is chanda, eagerness. It's a devotion. We see the magnificent result of making sacred. How beautiful it is to forgive. To restore and to forgive and to begin again with kindness and love, with compassion and with support for that which will bring out the best in us as human beings. And we have to be very wise with this chanda, this interest, this earnestness. It's a burning, another kind of fuel that burns and that gives us the drive to keep going even though it's difficult. We might feel like weeping. So much has been lost. So much trust has been violated. But here we are, we're ready. This is our special effort, our sacrifice to repair the damage. We're ready to stand up and face, take responsibility, be accountable, and begin again. So we bring forth this feeling of chanda. It's like saying yes to the ascent of a mountain that seems insurmountable, beyond our strength. But we just take one step at a time. I remember when I was a young nun, I first received my alms bowl, and now we have unbreakable bowls, but in those days, our bowls were made of clay. And so we had to carry it very mindfully, and we had to treat it as if it were the head of the Buddha. And inside this alms bowl would come all the food that was the source of our daily sustenance. So I remember guarding that bowl with my life. And when you wash it, you'd always get down on your knees so that you wouldn't drop it. This guarding of the bowl was a way of developing mindfulness and present moment awareness. It was very interesting because we used the bowl every day, and we would walk for alms in the village and have the bowl in a harness around our neck. And I remember thinking the Buddha really understood how to give us a training. This is just an example of his brilliance at devising a system of training whereby little by little you learn that this burden that you have around your neck, which you actually love because it's the bowl that feeds you, it nourishes you, but it's heavy. And being present and using mindfulness in the present moment, holding the bowl as if the empty bowl contained in it the whole path, the path that I had to carry in front of me, and always keep it in my mind. I couldn't take my attention away from it. Even walking down the road, step by step, I'd have to make sure that the bowl wasn't falling out of its harness, because if it fell on the road, it would be smashed. So all these details of our life, which were laid down in the code of discipline 2.5 millennia ago, little by little trained our minds to be attentive, to be present, and to hold the present moment as if it's a bowl, an alms bowl that feeds you moment by moment, not to let it go. So it's very interesting that the practice of present moment awareness can be developed and matured and ripened in these different postures and different ways of training, which we might think have nothing to do with the real stuff, which is meditating. But actually, the real stuff is everything that we're doing, everything. The eating, the going to work, hauling water and chopping wood, right? Those are the ways. It's the everyday tasks that we do that teach us. If we do them properly, these help us to become more and more integrated, more and more present. And this kind of integration of our faculties is what develops our ability to make a pure connection to the moral fiber that is the very essence of our breath, of our life, of our existence as human beings. So that's chanda. Now we're on the O for one-pointed. So that's another way that we develop that one-pointedness for a partner or someone in your life, your mother that you deeply care for and love, or someone that you're devoted to, your teacher, your guru, your patient, whoever you're taking care of, your sister or brother who's in trouble or suffering, or your baby, or yourself. To hold the suffering that you are feeling right now in a one-pointed fashion and trying to turn it towards the good so that it no longer is a burden for you. Just to feel it one step at a time is doable, and to feel it as something light, something that's been given as a teaching, as a doorway to open the heart, as a way of cracking through the pain so that we can come to the light, to the truth. Because if the mind is purified, nothing is heavy at all. That's the secret. So if we stay one-pointed long enough, pure enough, integrated enough, our integrity will be the purification of the mind and the realization of Nibbana. So that one-pointedness is new at every moment, that we can stop being entertained by fiction. Our whole identity is a fiction. Our attachment to the body, it's all a fiction. But we believe in it. We're deluded by it. And the delusion is a running fiction of our lives. And we need to look more truly at the truth so that we can stop believing that we are this body and that we are these body parts strung together and it's a being, because that in itself has to be realized for what it is. It's not what it appears to be. And each of us must realize that by coming to an understanding of our true nature, by following this path of reconciliation. But to be able to walk up this mountain or cross to the farther shore, we need to dive deeply and let go our control. So we have to focus faith, energy, mindfulness, the one-pointedness, the unification of the mental factors, so that we're going in one direction and not bifurcated or divided into multitasking and multi-directional interests, but be really truly one-pointed, concentrated in one way, focused in one direction only this, only now, only Nibbana, nothing else. How difficult is that? We have to, as if, offer everything that we do to the development of wisdom, that everything in our life is actually dedicated to waking up. There has to be that income to survive in the world. But then we choose right livelihood, and so we have the Eightfold Path to guide us, and that builds our integrity. But we don't work only for money. We work for integrity. And then if we gain money by working with integrity and developing our ethical purity, then we can also work towards Nibbana. This is a fourfold Sangha. It's not only monastics, it's monks, nuns, laymen, and laywomen working towards our freedom from delusion, from ill will, and from greed. And of course, then we have to have the right intention, but it must be a culminating intention. In the beginning we intend, in the middle we must intend, in the ending we're always intending towards, inclining towards Nibbana, towards freeing ourselves from delusion. This path is not possible without a loving heart, because ill will is insidious. It creeps in very, very easily into the mind, and it is through unconditional loving kindness that we begin to develop an unconditional compassion, unconditional joy, which is finally perfected in equanimity, that is able to bear with every condition that we face, regardless. And then the attention is towards sila, samadhi, panya, and the Eightfold Path, developing virtue, developing purity of heart, preserving it, protecting it at all costs, developing compassion towards ourselves, towards others. The culminating faculty that draws all the others to the final realization of Nibbana is wisdom. Never turn away from the truth. Buddha wisdom The Buddha is not a historical figure, but the Buddha is here, present every day. Any moment of practice, the Buddha is there, on the shrine of the heart. So then we come to T. Yes, T is for truth, and I, inveterate, inviolable truth. O is for wonderful, O-N-E, derful, wonderful. And N, the path, takes us to that which is sacred, and that is Nibbana, the deathless, the incorruptible, empty, that which can never be filled and never be emptied, mysterious, supreme, awakening to that, the full knowledge of things as they truly are. Simon Weil, the great French philosopher of the 20th century, once said, evil is the reason for God in this world. What does that mean? The hardest and the highest compassion that we could possibly practice is to beings that harm us. In the Metta Sutta, you'll see that even to someone that we dislike, beings that we like or dislike, visible or invisible, tall or short, any kind of being, we have to be able to really develop this unsurpassable quality of loving kindness. We have to be able to direct it to people who kill and destroy and do terrible things. Why? Because it helps our own freedom from hatred, from ill will. It helps us to become so purified. The next step is compassion. We want to perfect all the sublime abidings. So compassion to the point where we can forgive those who have no compassion. And that is a divine, it's a sublime, it's a godly or heavenly practice. It makes sacred. We become like a vessel of sanctity because we bear no ill will to anyone. To develop a mind of such purity that we can reach the farther shore, we have to have unconditional compassion. So that our heart is not closed to anyone like the sun. The sun shines on every insect, every kind of creature in the world, every criminal. The sun is there for them. Then we have to bear that kind of compassion. At least we try to invite the possibility that someday maybe I will have compassion for that person. The other side of this is that we believe at some level that every human being can, if they realize the severity of their delusion, that we're ready, we're there ready to forgive them. We forgive them in advance, but we don't condone. We don't agree with it. But for our own enlightenment, if we can act from awakened compassion, then we create the possibility for them to wake up to their misdeeds. Because that keeps turning the wheel of Dhamma in the world, so that someday they may come to it and meet somebody who will say, you have done wrong, do you see? Even if they're dying, they may suddenly say, I did a terrible thing. I'm so sorry. At least the seed of Dhamma is there. And it can only come if there is forgiveness. Hatred is never resolved through hatred, but through love alone. If we allow the mind to dwell in despising those people, then we stoop to a low level. We're desecrating. We go from desecration to desecration. We don't go from hatred to goodwill. We go from hatred to hatred. It's contagious. That's why it takes such a long time to train the mind to not give way to ill will. It's like a leaky dam. It starts to crack because it can't contain the heaviness of ill will. But if we turn away from ill will, it just falls away. We turn away from it and turn towards loving kindness and compassion and equanimity. We're not distraught in the face of pain. We stand up in front of it with courage and we reconcile. We rectify the damage that someone else has done out of compassion. Because there's this mess and no one's cleaning it up. So we stop everything to repair it, to restore it, to reconcile it. This we trust.